Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod West Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here with my co-host, the Joe Exotica to my Carol Baskin, Kendall Scudder.
Exotica.
So y'all are arch enemies?
Yeah, we are arch enemies. He's just an exotic, just like a flat exotic.
Oh, I thought his name was Exotica.
It's just, I think Exotic is the name of the porn convention, actually, but...
Oh, I get them confused. All right. Anyway, you know, hi, how you doing?
You're the Jenna Jameson to my Exotica.
I don't really want to be known as Carol Baskin, but I was just trying to sound someone that fights a lot.
Yeah.
Carol Baskin.
Who's this talking in the background?
And we're so excited because joining us today is our third mic, back by popular demand after winning a big race in Dallas for in the eastern part of Dallas.
House District 100 with Jasmine Crockett.
With Jasmine Crockett, our friend, our soul, political soul child of Texas, OG Carol.
Yay! Hey, everybody.
We're so glad
to see everybody. You. Yes. Thank you so much for having me back. I am so happy to be here. And yes, we did win, but district is super gerrymandered. So it's part of the West, a lot of the South, of the city of Dallas proper. And then we do have a little bit of East and, you know, over there by where Kendall's neighborhood is too. So. Yeah.
Most of your votes coming from East Dallas over there though, or 6th?
From all over the district, really. I mean, our support was far and wide. And I was very, very pleased to see that election day trial.
Well, what have you been doing? So we had to leave the studio due to COVID, and we started setting up, and then we couldn't figure out how to get third mics on. Like, it was just a whole thing. So we haven't seen you in a while. I mean, have you just been working on a Crockett race? What's new? What's been happening?
Yes, you know, I'm still, you know, working with the representative-elect right now, because now we get to do the important work, the real work. We got in the community, we talked to people, and we kind of got a feel for what they needed. They told us, and now we can turn that into policy in a way that they can see and feel some change. So I'm very happy about this. And then, of course, she is very much so for the same issues that I'm for. So I'm happy to be part of moving that forward as well. So I'm very excited about that. And then I don't want to give it away, but I'm also very excited to be here because of who our guest is.
Who's our guest?
Our guest today is the Democratic nominee for the 3rd congressional district in Texas, Lulu Cycli.
Yay!
During her, I am showing you some love to Lulu.
We love Lulu.
Lulu is the three of ours like favorite person. So she's pretty it's really exciting to see.
Yes, we do love Lulu.
Yeah, we're excited. So,
what kind of tough questions are you going to ask, Carol?
Ask Lulu? No, I'm not going to ask her any tough questions because she has already made it very, very clear where she stands on all of the issues. And when somebody has a track record like Lulu does, you don't have to question where they stand or how they're going to act for you. So I don't have any tough questions for Lulu. I just have the best wishes for her. And I know in November, we will all get to celebrate again together.
That would be great.
Why are you being so political today, Carol?
Like, you're like, talking
about the great hard work we're having to do for House District 100. You're talking about the tough answers that Lulu's giving. Why don't you talk about something that's not so political?
You know, it's just artifact from being on the phone. I'm used to being there in person with y'all, and you know, we're laying back and we're cracking jokes, and I can reach over and slap Lillian on the arm when she says something funny. So it's just a little bit, I have to loosen up, I guess. I got to loosen up a little bit over the phone.
It's hard.
Because on, you know, on the Zoom, it's all like, come on, let's get to it quick.
We still don't feel like we found our mojo outside of the studio.
Yeah.
It's just artifact from the telecommunication.
I know.
And you know, I'm a big hugger. That's the other thing. So I want to reach over there and give y'all some love.
So other than politics, are you been just quarantining with your family and haven't been at the
Yes, park? Yes, quarantine. And then I do have, you know, I work with some small businesses as well throughout the year. So we still have to adjust to how we reach their customers in this pandemic. And everyone consumes data so differently now that we have to be very, very quick to adapt, because it's like second by second, everything is changing. So I have been busy. So it's a blessing really to still be employed during Corona, but I wish I had also lost some weight.
Yeah.
Have you gained weight or lost weight?
You don't look like you've gained.
You know, I just can't get a feel for it because I just can't get a feel for it. I see myself the same every day, but I don't know. And then because I'm home all the time, I get to wear just my sweatpants or basketball shorts, you know, comfort wear.
Yeah, I know.
Sometimes people tell me that they've lost a bunch of weight in quarantine or they've gained a bunch of weight, but nobody's telling me they've everybody's
gained, trying to lose.
I probably have gained, but I guess the first stage is denial.
Yeah. Well, can you believe Texas has handled this corona? We, you and I haven't talked about since the corona.
We have.
How poorly we've handled this as a state. It's just so sad, really.
Yeah, and it sucks that we have no leadership at the top, because this is not something that just impacts like one subset of the population or one area of our lives. It's impacted the economy, the way we live our everyday lives, even the way we interact with our loved ones. And we really needed leadership in every department from, I mean, even CPS, a lot of people don't think about it. Kids in CPS are more likely to have asthma or diabetes or some type of pre-existing health condition, which makes them more susceptible to getting COVID. On top of that, they're not able to visit with their parents. And a lot of those really indigent parents that have those cases going on, they don't have broadband, as Lulu talked about in parts of her district, people don't have broadband. And it's just a problem. So I know that's affecting people there as well. And the governor's failure has trickled down to every level.
Yeah, I mean, isolating a deadly virus is not something you want to leave to the grassroots. You tend to think that you'd have some top leadership there to be able to steer the ship.
I mean, Clay Jenkins.
Or give the grassroots the power and the resources they need, or take their suggestions.
Or just being so terrible to big city mayors and county judges as he's been. I mean, it's just been so disrespectful to Clay Jenkins from Dallas and Lena Hidalgo from Harris County and the mayor from Austin. I mean, they're just so divisive. I mean, this is our World War III, and they're not acting like it. It's just terrible.
Okay, before we start on your segment, I think people are going to want to know where the hell we are, because we've been in a different location. We've been in my apartment, so where are we?
We are in Collin County, Texas, one of the fastest growing counties in the country, in Frisco. And I live in a high rise over here that overlooks where that little football team plays here in Dallas. And
it's where the Cowboys practice.
Yeah, well, they're not practicing now, I don't think, but maybe. Anyway, because I mean, talk about weird stuff with the NBA and the NFL and the college sports. I mean, that whole thing is a total shit show.
We always laugh at Will's place because for a political dork, this is a fun apartment, because that's Denton County, which is Skidaninka's district. We're in what, the 33rd, right? That is Sharon Hirsch's district. 66. That's Lorenzo Sanchez's district. And this, not out here, this way is Lulu Cycli's district.
Yeah. And we want them all to be blue.
You can see all the different districts from your high rise.
Right here. Yes. And these are the places we need to win in order to win the state. And Beto did such a good job out this way, really doing the spade work out here, getting people organized, that it's really interesting to watch. We don't have Beto at the top of the ticket, but I think by having he's not on the ticket, but by having Donald Trump on the ticket, I think that same energy will come out and vote some of our folks in. So it's exciting. One thing I was going to ask you, Carol, I don't think we talk about it enough, and I think about it a lot, but I now realizing you're an education reformer and care a lot about kids like all of us do, but what these families are going through with these kids at home, working, homeschooling, Zoom meetings. I mean, it is just atrocious that we've they have no resources and the state gives them no resources. If there was ever a rationale for preschool paying for early child care, this is it. I mean, these families, what they're going through is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm. And I know Kendall was laughing. I've been so blessed. I've been dodging the corona, but I definitely have caught the baby fever, okay? So I'm happy. I do love children, yes.
Are you wanting to have kids right now?
Oh, No.
So you have
No. I'm not expecting. If that was the question, I'm not expecting.
Well, when you say you caught baby fever, I was like, oh, is Carol looking to have kids?
No. You know, for the longest time, I just didn't want any children. But now it's like, maybe I would like to be a father, you know?
Oh. Yes, so
it's a big consideration, huh?
I had the opposite reaction to corona. I was like, all these idiots with kids right now. Like, I was like, it's great not having kids.
Yeah. No, I'm glad I don't have any right now, but it's like, you know, you're really, okay, I have an ulterior motive. I really just want grandchildren. That's what it is.
I got a couple you can have. Yeah. No, you can't.
You don't want them.
You know how wild they are, but they're pretty cute. Yeah. But these
It's true. The governor, they're not listening. They don't listen to the people who are in need of these resources. And they also always want to try, you know, some roundabout way. There's really no roundabout way because it's not just when corona hits. Folks have been having these issues for a long, long time. They haven't been able to get housing. Without stable housing, you can't get a job. Without a job, you can't get housing. So unless we help people out and set them up with one or the other, ideally everything they need, we're not going to see change on the big basis that everyone wants. You know, people can't just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and, you know, work their way to the top. No,
if
no.
They don't have boots. Get them some exactly. Boots.
Well, get them
boots. I mean, these, you know, a lot of folks have really been cut off at the knees. Boots aren't going to help them. So.
All right. Well, we're so glad you're here and so happy that we're going to have Lulu on later. But before we start, as always, we have to hit the headline. First headline, Dan Patrick.
Good headline.
Always in the news. In his interview, he said, people who buy guns don't vote for Democrats who are going to take them away. Read his statement. He's been advertising and raising money on the fact that the Democrats are going to take away guns.
So, I don't want your guns. I have my own.
Yeah. And this is on the same day as the anniversary of El Paso. His email went out to his supporters talking about not voting for Democrats after many Texans were slain in El Paso. It was just so disrespectful. And that was, his email talked about the soaring gun sales signal a Trump victory. And that was signed by our lieutenant governor. Just shameful.
What crazy ass fucking planet do you live on if you think that a background check is taking your guns away? What is in Dan Patrick's background where getting a background check is getting his guns taken away?
And let me tell you, those increasing sales, those are people who didn't really feel like they needed a firearm before, but after seeing how things have been shaken out recently, they feel the need to protect themselves. So that's why the sales are going up.
Because of the protests and others. Yeah, the sales are up.
No. I'm not talking about the protesting. I'm talking about, you know, just seeing all the inequality and they're like,
yeah,
maybe I do need to protect myself from a tyrannical government. You know, Trump is acting crazy. He could send anybody to my house. So they're like, you know, gonna arm themselves, protect themselves. But and that part is fine. As long as we know that they can pass a background check, that they don't have any mental health issues, they're not gonna be a threat to themselves or others, and that they're gonna take the precautions to safe storage and we limit the amount of ammo and capacity it has, then I think we'll be fine.
Well, it's a real miscalculation if you're thinking that everybody buying a gun's voting for Republicans. Sorry.
That's the point I wanted to get at.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, the fact that him putting it out there as a talking point, as a fundraising point in the middle of this pandemic, mm-hmm. in the middle of people mourning in El Paso, he's just so out of touch. All right, next headline. Ted Cruz falsely claims the Democrats are arguing for abolishing the police and holds a Senate hearing in D.C. about Antifa. And I was just embarrassed to be from Texas with that guy.
They only speak in hyperbole. Like, they don't have any, like, talking points that aren't just completely outrageous out of their ass.
I know. It's just soundbite.
But I mean, maybe that's why they do well, because like Democrats,
we
would be saying, like, if we were in their position, the Democrats would be saying something along the lines of, oh, they want to scale down the investments in the police force. Whereas they're both like, they're going to get rid of all of them. You're going to die in the streets.
Well, with the Trump.
The difference is Democrats, they are so worried. You know, what's public opinion? I have to say what people want to hear. Republicans, they don't care. They are going to change public opinion. You're going to hear what I want to say. That's their attitude. I'm not saying one is more right than the other, but that's just what it is.
We waste a lot of time, Democrats, tripping over ourselves because we're poll tests every goddamn
Too worried to just be themselves and speak freely.
Right.
So just for clarification, Carol, are Democrats trying to abolish all police departments?
No, absolutely not. They're trying to get rid of the policing systems that allow for this, you know, massive amounts of inaccountability, where people who are supposed to be enforcing the law are lawless themselves. But more so than anything else, they want that money to be removed from the police budget, not because of anything in particular the police has done, because what they're doing is not me. This has been going on since before police forces were even started. The reason police forces were originally started was to round up runaway slaves. Mm-hmm. And they have now turned into our main way of protecting our communities. But they don't create safer communities. When you invest in the community, it will become safer. When people have opportunity, like I said before, when they have housing, when they can take care of themselves and their family, and when something happens to them, they know they will be taken care of, crime will go down. A lot of people want to attribute the crime to a police shortage. One day the city will have more than enough officers than they could ever need, and crime will still be rampant if they don't invest in the community. And I do support the calls to defund DPD, and really I support the calls to refund the people. That's what we need.
Yeah, more counselors, more community social workers, less guys with guns.
And really, they need to give the resources straight to the community, because when you involve all these third parties and people in between, there's more opportunity for corruption, or the money never really gets down to the people who need it most. So we need to get them set up with housing and make it sustainable to where they can get a good paying job and continue to provide for themselves and their families. Yeah. You know, so it's not just the mental health. Yeah.
I read a news article a little while back whenever all this kind of started simmering as a discussion point about how there was a school district somewhere that is funding like a security force that they have at their schools. And because everybody was advocating to defund the police or whatever, they ended up not buying a tank that year out of their school budgets. I mean, like, we have militarized to a really ridiculous level. I mean, I don't think it's unjustified to say, you know, maybe we should evaluate the way we're allocating funds. Right. That's nothing extreme about saying that.
Right. No. I mean, I've seen so many tanks and, you know, in these communities where they're showing you their fire trucks, and then you see two tanks that they bought from the city. It's like, really? You don't need that out.
Or, you know, the government will have a surplus and just be like, hey, we'll give these to you if you just keep up the maintenance.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what possible use could you have for that in your city? So you got pumped into paying for the maintenance for somebody else's vehicle.
Yeah, and it just sends all the wrong messages. All right, next headline. The GOP officials will choose the likely next member of Congress from Congressional District 4 this Saturday, so tomorrow. And 150 GOP officials will decide who's going to be the next congressman, because the congressman, John Ratcliffe, that was there, is now head of some what is he, national
security advisor? He's the national security advisor with no national security background.
So District 4 is out.
District 4 is my turf. Yeah. I was born and raised in District 4. It goes from Sherman to Texarkana in North Texas. And right now it's come down to kind of two people. It's come down to either Pat Fallon, who has never lived in Congressional District 4. He was a state rep that was one of the worst state reps that were
terrible.
There.
He's from out this way.
Ended up winning a Republican primary. He served one legislative session in the Senate, and now he's ladder climbing to a congressional district he's never lived in, running against a guy named Jason Ross, who's my counterpart, actually, in the Republican Party. He's the Republican national, or the state Republican executive committee for the same district that I am.
Is he a tool like Pat Fallon?
He worked for, no one's as much of a tool as Pat Fallon. But this Ross guy was like the chief of staff or district director or somebody for Ratcliffe. He's thought to be a little less crazy. But of course, he's still crazy.
Yeah.
They're all, they've all lost their minds.
Pat Fallon's that fundamentalist and empowered Texas. Women don't have any rights. Let's kill all the women that even talk about abortion. And he's just terrible.
Yeah. Ross is not empowered Texans. Fallon's is empowered Texans. But what happened?
Who do you think's going to be anointed?
Hang on. Before, what's happening is, in order for Ratcliffe to get removed from the ballot, you then have to have precinct chairs vote to replace him on the ballot. So they're having to have different little conventions all around the district. Ted Cruz was in my hometown of Sulphur Springs advocating for Fallon the other day. And so all the precinct chairs are voting on who it's going to be. And this person will probably be a Congress member in this district until they're done, right? It's going to be a safe Republican district. So we're hoping Ross can pull it out over Fallon because he won't be as bad as Fallon.
I mean, Fallon's like a Louie Gohmert.
Yeah, Fallon is like a Louie Gohmert. You'll have no constituency services.
Right.
I mean, he's an ideologue nut.
Right.
Whereas Ross, I think, cares a little bit about government working, but he's just completely wrong on everything.
Right.
So
I'll take that guy.
They'll be facing off against Russell Foster in November, but last time that a Democrat ran there was in 2018 with Catherine Cranch. She got about 22-23% of the vote, so it's a really hard district.
Even in an anti-Trump year referendum, still going to be hard.
You never know. It's a very, very difficult district. But so the question is, who's going to win? Here's the thing. It depends on how good Jason Ross was as a committee man for the Republicans. Like, I think that if I were to have run for something out there in that district, I'm so in contact with the people that are there that, I mean, I could probably win something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how involved he was in his district. Because Fallon's been a senator, but not in this district.
But so Ted Cruz,
they know Ross.
I know, but that's Ted Cruz country out there. They love Ted Cruz out there. And this guy's going to have that.
But I look at, on the Democratic side, I look at things like, you know, when Sarah Eckhart became a senator, everybody's now competing because they want to be county judge. Mm-hmm. And Beto came in and endorsed a guy that worked for him. And a bunch of Beto ambassadors came up and said, no, we like this local person. And sometimes, like, really local people that do party work or that are in contact with people a lot, they tend to do really well in some of these races. So I don't
That's who it needs to be, too. I personally support Diana. I think Diana should be the next county judge. But Beto, he has done this a lot very recently, where he'll go in and he'll just endorse somebody because they work for him, or not necessarily because they're the best candidate out there. But has he really been winning? I mean, I love to see him helping the down-ballot Democrats. That, I think, is great. But, I think he needs to also be thoughtful about the influence he has and preserving the integrity of that.
Yeah, what I think is sad about Congressional District 4 is that people there are so used to shitty leadership. Like, before Ratcliffe, they had Ralph Hall, who was the congressman there for, what, 3 decades?
400 years.
He was, like, 90 years old. He was the oldest member of Congress. Like, they aren't used to seeing someone that they're interacting with.
That works for them.
So you know, Ross being a committeeman only stretches out to Sulphur Springs. You still have all the way to Texarkana to go.
Right.
You know, those people aren't used to having to meet or care about who their congressperson is. So, I mean, Fallon's got a bit of an advantage there, you know?
We shall see. All right, next headline. Vice President Joe Biden has led President Donald Trump in Texas and
thought President Real Donald Trump, you're reading the tweet.
In 5 of the last 9 polls. I mean, that's just incredible. If you look at the polls, they're not dumb polls. They're like YouTube Texas politics poll, public policy poll, Fox News poll, Quinnipiac. I mean, there's a lot of polls that are showing the neck and neck nature of this presidency. I mean, in Dallas County, it looks like Biden is up somewhere between 14 and 20 points. How can that be? It's just incredible.
I think he's going to win by more than 20 points in Dallas.
In Dallas County.
I mean, like, that's a place that used to not, like, until 2006, it was a battleground.
Right.
Democrats have been doing well. I think it's just going to be blowout margins this year in places like Dallas and Houston and Austin. And
I also think these suburbs, there's just no, the suburbs are where all the action's at. That's why I'm so glad we have Lulu on, and we have a bunch of great Democratic candidates in suburbs all around Texas. And that's why I'm so pissed at the DCCC. They need to come all in Texas. They just put 5 or 6 of our folks on the battle, red to blue, and we have about 10 that should be there. And we don't get them all because people are like, you can't have 10 from Texas. Yeah, you can, because Texas is about the suburbs. And if they'll fund these candidates, we can pick up a ton of seats. So yeah. Anyway, the polls are just crazy, but people are so scared to accept the polls right now, myself included, because of 2016.
Yeah. Well, I hope how people interpret the polls is that, especially in Texas, it's like, oh shit, if we really go out and vote, we can do it. That's how they need to interpret the polls, not that, oh, we good. No. We are not good. Take your ass to vote. Right.
Right. You and bring 10 of your friends. Yeah. So that's exciting. So do you believe these polls, Carol? You've been watching politics for a long time.
You know, I don't know. Really, after 2016, can anyone really believe the polls? But also, we have to remember the voter interference that took place in 2016.
Lots of it.
Well, but also, the polls weren't wrong. Polls don't measure electoral college. Polls measure popular vote. And she got 3 million more votes. If the polls were right, there was nothing wrong with
it. Not in those key states that cost us the presidency.
They weren't polling in places like Wisconsin because they thought they had it under control.
Yeah, she never went there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I mean, this is just a whole list appeared in the Texas Tribune today of all the polls that are showing Biden way up. So pretty exciting. All right, next headline. Our last headline is about the Attorney General of New York.
What's her name, Lil?
Her name is Letitia James. And she did a press conference that was very dramatic, talking about the NRA being basically an organization that could no longer keep their status as a nonprofit since they've been doing things like taking private jets for the CEO and his family, using donors' monies in ways that you're not allowed to use, and giving the guy a $17 million payout when he left. I mean, just incredible.
Give me one of those jobs with a 17
million. But the Texas connection is when it all happened, Governor Abbott, I guess.
No, it was President Trump said they should move to Texas.
Oh, President Trump said they should move to Texas. And we want to say, that's okay.
We're good.
We're good. Go somewhere else, man. But anyway, that was pretty impressive what they're trying to do. Some people are criticizing that it's too much, but those forensic accountants and attorneys that do these kind of cases, they don't bring a case like this, and they have just seen way too much. They would no way they'd get out there that far if they hadn't seen terrible.
Well, she definitely would not have brought it forward unless she can really, unless she thinks she can really grab them by the nuts.
Yeah. So maybe we could get rid of them in Texas if we had a real attorney general, not the convicted.
Is this you? You're going to run for attorney general in 2022?
If there was ever a job I would love in this time frame, yes, but I'm not that. I'm not running, but I'm just
it's
saying.
It's floated. I mean, we're
it's
not.
It's not floated. But an attorney general in a big place like Texas could be amazing if we would do the work, but we haven't had one in a lot of years that can do the work. So certainly not Ken Paxton. Can we talk about Ken Paxton?
Who was the last Democratic DA or Democratic AG we had? Was it Maddox?
Probably.
And that ended in the jail cell, didn't it?
Yeah, but he at least had some foresight. I mean, some balls.
Yeah.
But Ken Paxton, again, did something this week. What was it? I guess they basically, he appealed and he's still not having to face trial. So.
Oh, right. So they were trying to move Ken Paxton's trial back to Collin County where it belongs, where he committed his crimes. And
oh, I want to be on that jury.
I know, we all do. But it got moved to Houston, and then Houston tried to move it back to Collin County. He appealed it. They appealed it, so it's going to stay in Houston. So.
And that was Hit the Headline. And when we come back, we will welcome Lulu Slightly back to the show and talk about winning Texas Congressional District 3.
Stick around!
Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. We're so excited today because we're going to have Lulu Slightly.
Yay!
Who's the Democratic nominee for Texas Congressional District 3, which is the most educated district in the country, still held by a Republican.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's almost as if, as districts get more educated, they throw out Republicans for some reason.
Welcome, Lulu.
Thank you, guys. I'm excited to be back. Thank you guys for having me.
This is the first time we have had you post-runoff, so congratulations on winning there. But Collin County is one of these hotbeds in Texas, and this is the first year that this district has been considered one that's flippable. What makes you a unique candidate for Congressional District 3?
I look like the district. We'll just make that very and abundantly clear. I look like the district, and I talk about the issues that people care about here. So we can get into
what are you hearing out there, what people care about?
It's a surprise. We're not going to talk about it. Well, the first one that should not surprise any of y'all is healthcare. And with the pandemic, it's made it even more abundantly clear that we've got to do something to fix our healthcare system. People should not have to choose between having to pay for insulin or really a hospital visit due to COVID or their mortgage. So healthcare is definitely the main issue, but it's been interesting to see kind of how more issues have evolved as subcategories from healthcare, like investing more in infrastructure so that way people can benefit from telemedicine and making sure that we do have high-speed internet in rural areas, which my district does have a tiny rural section of it, and making sure that telemedicine visits are covered by insurance companies, and then really investing more in mental health. I think COVID has really exposed that we don't invest enough in mental health and making sure that people are really taken care of.
Awesome. Well, so what happened? You ran, you won on the 14th, July 14th, and then has it just been a whirlwind and now you have less than 90 days to get to the finish line and be ready to beat Van Taylor, the trust fund kid?
What's his real name? Doesn't he have a weird name?
Nicholas Van Campen Taylor.
Nicholas Van Campen Taylor.
Like a Dracula movie.
We're going to the Hamptons with Nicholas Van Campen Taylor.
Actually, I was talking to someone on the phone yesterday and they said, you should start calling him like Movin' Van Taylor. And I was like, oh, that's clever. How have we not thought of that before?
Yeah. So, big house in the district, I heard. I heard he has his big house in Northern Virginia.
That's what we've heard. We haven't confirmed any of that yet. So.
What are you going to do? So, I've been a candidate many a time, never won. However, I've never been a candidate in the middle of an international pandemic. What does a congressional candidate do to make sure that you're engaging in your communities during a pandemic?
A lot of this, Zoom calls. Honestly, I mean, I'm an extrovert. You guys know me. I'm an extrovert. I like to be in front of people rather than be by myself or be in my apartment making phone calls and talking to people on the phone all day. That has been challenging for me, but I am very thankful that we do have the technology that we have to be able to communicate with voters, to have forums. We've been doing a lot of online forums and town halls. I'm going to plug here for a second. August 12th, so next Wednesday, We are having our general campaign kickoff event over Zoom virtually. We'd love to have anybody join us if you'd like. So we've got some of the presidents of the local Democratic clubs coming to talk about what we can all do together to make sure from Joe Biden all the way down to there are some city council races in Frisco, all get attention and making sure people are voting all the way down ballot. But we've been doing a lot of stuff like this online, trying to keep people as engaged as possible. I know people want to keep talking about COVID, but I think everyone's sick of it at the same time. But we're just trying to make it as interesting as possible, I guess.
And encouraging people to vote, right? Just to get out there.
Yeah. Honestly, the big push first is going to be voter registration. Second plug, October 3rd, last day to register to vote for the November election. So we are working with some statewide organizations as well as some local organizations to make sure that we are registering people to vote. We have a lot of unregistered voters here in the congressional district, so we want to make sure that they participate. And what better way to get them to participate is to go out and vote against Trump. So, and vote for a real president and a real congressional representative. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw the Texas Tribune post the poll that your campaign put out that was showing Biden 2 points up in your district. What do you attribute that to? I mean, is it because people in your district are so well educated? Are there certain issues in your community that they're rebelling against? Like, what do you attribute Biden performing so well in a district Trump won by 16 points in 2016?
Trump's record, what Trump has done in the last 3.5 years. I think that's really, and honestly, this COVID-19 situation that has exposed a lot of holes in our healthcare system, I think is really, really important. And people have realized that had we had adequate leadership, including Van Taylor, who voted to try and take away our healthcare during this crisis, has been very important for people on people's minds. They realize that, you know, you just can't vote party anymore. You really have to vote for the candidate to make sure that, you know, just having Republican next to your name doesn't mean that those values are going to be your values as a Republican. Same with the Democrats. So, you know, I'm running a campaign based on my values, how I was brought up, how I was raised, and that's clearly been resonating in the district, especially seeing how turnout was during the runoff, how motivated voters were to come out during a pandemic, having to vote in person despite, you know, our voting rights being trampled on all at the same time. So I think I really attribute it to that people's values are, people are really questioning if their values are really lining up with the candidate.
Yeah. And speaking of the way that you were raised and how you were brought up, you will be the first Arab American member of the Texas congressional delegation when you're elected. You're Lebanese American, and your parents immigrated from Lebanon. And so Lebanon's got a special spot in your heart. And this week, Lebanon has been in the news. For people who have a disconnect with a lot of those foreign policy issues or things that happened in the Middle East, what happened in Lebanon? And give us a rundown on that, because I know that was something that your campaign has been speaking about a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. My parents did. When my parents came to this country in 84, they fled civil war. There was a civil war in Lebanon for a long period of time. And my parents fled at kind of the height of it. Actually, when they left Lebanon, the airport was shut down. So they had to leave by boat to go to an island called Cyprus in order to take a flight out of Lebanon. So when I say fled, they fled. You know, Lebanon has had a tumultuous history, you know, over time, but most recently, last October, there was a big financial crisis that hit Lebanon really hard. And people took to the streets, not only in Lebanon, but across the world, even here in Dallas, people took to the streets to demand that the government dissolve and start a new government, because the people felt that the government was corrupt and treating their people poorly. So then add that with COVID-19 that that hit every corner of this planet. Definitely made the Lebanese economy tank even more, despite the fact that they were already tanking before with this financial crisis. And then this past Tuesday, so October 4th, a really large explosion happened in the port of Lebanon. It was the third most the third strongest explosion that's ever happened after the bombs in Hiroshima and in Japan as well. And that devastated a large portion of the city of Beirut, including many of my family and friends' homes. Luckily, no one that we know has been injured, but the pictures are just horrific. And my family, luckily everyone's safe, but their homes have been just completely, completely destroyed. And so that's kind of the 10,000 foot view of what's happening in Lebanon. There's other many other implications, but what's so...
Is it like people seem to be so furious about what happened, even people that aren't as schooled as you are on foreign policy or, you know, Lebanon or Beirut, but they're just so, it's such a failure of leadership to have had that much chemical stored on a port without any UN agency having investigated, or for the country of Lebanon. It just seems like such a failure of governance and leadership.
Well, and I mean, we continue kind of that failure of governance and leadership now. You know, I'm hearing from my family and friends who are there that the cleanup and the rescue missions are not even being conducted by the government. They're being conducted by volunteers and outside countries. France was one of the first countries to hit ground to make sure that they were providing aid as much as possible. And, you know, I think that the problem here in general, regardless of whether or not this explosion occurred, is that the people of Lebanon have not been heard. They haven't experienced any sort of compassion from their government, and they've been angry because they haven't been heard, because they haven't experienced any compassion. So there's this video that I saw on social media this morning or yesterday. President Macron showed up from France, and this woman is just yelling at him like, you know, we haven't been heard. We haven't felt compassion. You're the first person to be here to care about us, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm a little disappointed that the United States hasn't responded quite yet. I know I was listening to
disappointed.
Well, I know there's the American Task Force on Lebanon, which is an amazing organization. And they're starting to draft, you know, policies and advice for the administration to start taking action. Because, you know, as the leader of the free world, we need to be helping Lebanon. We need to make sure, you know, we have to be the leader for the international community for humanitarian aid to tackle the refugee problem, which Lebanon has been having for a longer period of time. You know, the American University there has been struggling since the financial crisis. We have to go in and help them. And I'm really thankful that the task force on Lebanon is stepping up to advise the administration on what we can, of how they can get involved. So
I think that this highlights why it's so important to have candidates that are diverse represented on the ballot, right? Because if somebody like me were running for Congress, like, I don't pay a lot of attention to Lebanon, guys. Sorry, I don't know that much about it. I don't really know a lot about Middle Eastern politics or what's going on. But for people who actually have those ties, that foreign policy perspective is so important, and we lack it with this overwhelmingly older white male Congress that we have. Do you think that is an accurate assessment? And how do you think that our party can do better of making sure that those different points of views and perspectives are represented on a ballot?
Well, I mean, I say this a lot on the campaign trail, is that here in the United States, we can't change Washington without changing who we've been there. And that's from the top of the ballot down to the bottom. You know, even if we're talking about the US or Lebanon, we know that in order to affect any change that we seek, we need diverse, committed, and ethical leadership. Like, that matters. So for the party should really encourage a diversification of candidates to make sure that all bases are covered. You know, here in my community, in Collin County, although we don't have a large Lebanese American community, we do have a large immigrant community. And the immigrant community has really taken to me, despite we've been culturally diverse, the issues that we all face are the same. And the fact of the matter is, you know, although I was born in the United States, raised in North Texas, my heart, I always have a piece of my heart in Lebanon, and particularly in the interests of a stable Middle East. So making sure that we have a diversification of candidates who are well-versed in these issues, who come from backgrounds that relate to these issues, I think is incredibly important, and we need to have more support of candidates like that.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you've gotten lots of support. You've been endorsed by Mark Feecy and
Who in, or Joaquin Castro endorsed you today, right?
Yep, that was exciting. And Donna Shalala, who's Lebanese American, was like the very first supporter. So we're rocking and rolling and moving and shaking. Steny Hoyer just endorsed. It hasn't been public yet, but secret.
Great news!
Well, this is the first to hear this.
We just really appreciate you taking time out of your super busy schedule to come back and powwow with us. We are all in on Lulu Sockley for Congress. You let us know what we can do, and we are here to help. If folks wanted to follow you in the campaign, where would they go to do that?
At Lulu for Texas on Twitter and Instagram. Please follow us. Our Twitter is very interesting, so make sure you definitely follow the Twitter. And
Twitter following.
She has a great Twitter.
Great Twitter.
Yeah, we have almost 25,000 followers. We're like a few short of 25,000 followers. So if you want to be part of the reason we hit 25,000, that'd be great. And so then
a few things you need in a campaign like this are volunteers and money for communicating to the masses. Thousands and thousands of people that are going to come out and vote against Donald Trump and stay on the ticket down to you, which you'll be pretty high up on the ticket, but
only third on the ballot, so that's helpful.
They'll vote for Joe Biden, they'll vote for MJ Hager, they'll vote for Lulu Sockley, and then Krista Castaneda on down.
Yeah. Good work. Well, we're super excited, Lulu, but you don't get to leave yet, because before you go, you have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed! Obsessed, for each of us are going to talk about one district for the week, whether it's politics or whether it would be completely obsessed with. And as always, we have to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what's something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
Well, I have a long hatred for Senator Ted Cruz as a person that lives, as a constituent and as somebody who's worked with his office in my career. And this week he was asked by the Washington Post whether or not he would consider running for president. And he said, "I don't know for sure, but I hope to run again." And that just scares me. After the guy got such an ass whooping when Trump,
ill.
He just got killed.
Remember when he refused to endorse Trump at the convention?
And now he thinks he's entitled. That entitlement that he has, and that entitlement at his hearing this week or last, where he talked about Antifa and the protests, where he basically blamed the Democrats for supporting these protests and was not interested at all in hearing about the brute force that was used against protesters. He is just one lousy guy. And the idea that he gets up every day and says, "I still want to be president," just makes me crazy.
All of us look at Ted Cruz and see a garbage can on fire, but Ted Cruz somehow looks into a mirror and sees a president. And I don't understand.
And I mean, I don't even think he has, do you have to have balls in order to be a president? Because he has no balls. He let Donald Trump talk so bad about his wife and his family. And then he's up there in the middle of his Trump.
The problem, too many balls. We needed someone with no balls, like Hillary, a woman.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I think history has
balls out of all of
balls,
them.
Actually, yeah. Is a prerequisite.
All right, no balls, Ted Cruz. Anyway, that's my obsessed.
Good obsessed, Lillian. Good obsessed. Carol, what is something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
I have been obsessed with the recent primary that took place in Missouri, where Cori Bush, an incumbent who was part of a 50-year dynasty, and she did it, you know, by working hard, being engaged in the community, and really being chosen by her neighbors and her, you know, the people who live there with her and experience the same problems every day. And I love to see that, because it kind of goes to what we were talking about with Lulu as well. We don't see representation in office a lot of the time, whether it's on, you know, class or race or gender, whatever basis it is. We don't see accurate representation in elected leadership. And a lot of the times, it's not because voters don't want to vote for them. It's because voters never get the opportunity. A lot of them get weeded out in the primary by party elites who want people from their same, you know, elite background or class network, or people that, you know, they are familiar with, look like them, and they act as the gatekeepers. So I love to see these kind of upsets where the people get the last say. Not all the big money, not all the, you know, the backroom handshakes, not all these people pulling the strings. I love when voters vote in such high numbers that no amount of manipulation can change the results.
Preach, brother. That's awesome.
That was a good one, Carol.
I love Cori Bush. Love her, love her.
I love whenever, like, okay, so I have this, like, hatred towards people who are, like, Congress members because their daddy was a Congress member. Like, those kind of people. I'm not here for it. And so I love that she beat some guy who was a legacy Congress member. That's brilliant. I love it.
That was awesome.
Good obsessed, Carol. Good obsessed. Democratic nominee for Congressional District 3, Lulu Sackley. What's something this week you've been completely obsessed with?
So I almost, my heart like fell into the pit of my stomach because I thought Carol was going to take my obsessed. But my obsessed also has to do with a Missouri primary race, except it's the Missouri 3rd Congressional District, where a woman named Megan Rezabek beat a man named Dennis Oglesby. But there's no record of a Megan Rezabek existing. She's a bot is what it sounds like. And that is what I've been completely obsessed with. I have been going in a deep dive to find out who this woman is. No one knows who she is, and no one on Twitter knows who she is, and I'm not entirely sure what the Missouri Democratic Party is doing about it at the moment, but that is what I've been obsessed with.
You know, we did that in Texas. We did that
in 2018.
It was a
certain person. It wasn't us all.
It was somebody.
Yeah.
Who was that, Carol?
One main person, I think you might know, I don't know.
But was it a bot? No, it wasn't a bot, it was
somebody. No, I'm saying one person orchestrated the whole ordeal, but it was people, they were trying to dilute the women's vote with the stalking horse.
Gotcha.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought that's what you were referring to.
No. Like we did that before in Texas where we accidentally elected someone that we didn't know if they existed or not. In the Democratic primary, in 2014, we nominated Jim Hogan for agriculture commissioner, and they didn't even have photos of him to put in the newspaper. No one thought he was going to get the nomination. It was supposed to go to Asia Hugh Fitzsimmons, but apparently Jim Hogan's a better ballot name, and some guy nobody knows won. And then we did it again for railroad commissioner when we nominated Grady Yarborough in 2016 over Lon Burney. So what happened?
So like with those races, was it an automatic the other person got the nomination?
No, they kept people on the ballot and they just didn't campaign or do anything and no one saw them. They never showed up to editorial board meetings. They never did anything.
Well, what's so creepy about this one, and I'm sure it happened in Texas too, is that this Megan Rezabek person doesn't have any FEC paperwork. And then today she on her face, so her Facebook and Twitter are just complete ghosts. But today on her Facebook, like every hour she's been posting about like random issues. Super eerie.
No FEC paperwork. Who does she think she is? Seema Hernandez? Great obsessed, Lulu Sackley.
But real quick, what I was referring to was there were these three judges that were running, the incumbents, and they had serious challengers who are well-qualified women. And at the last minute, they had somebody file multiple women in all these different races just to be on the ballot. They didn't campaign, they didn't raise any money, and this is in the Dallas Morning News. Y'all know I don't believe in conspiracies, I'm a skeptic, but this was in the journalism. And they found out what the scheme was because there was that one person all behind it, but the news didn't say who that person was. But luckily, it didn't work. And two of those judges did lose their elections and their spot on the bench to very, very well qualified women. I'm so happy to see continuing to serve.
Yeah, wow. That was bad. Yeah.
Great and the one Lulu Sackley. Great obsessed. My obsessed this week is not something that was in the news quite as much. as you know, I love the TikTok, okay? I don't post on it as much, but that's really growing on me, guys. I like it. I sit around, I look at the TikTok a lot as I'm going to sleep. I watch way too much of the TikTok. And now that Donald Trump has been hating on TikTok and trying to get rid of it, it's made me want to watch it even more. Well, I saw a video on TikTok that linked me to a Facebook group called A Group Where We All Pretend to Be Boomers. And I have been completely obsessed with this Facebook group. There's about 50,000 people in it, and they all just randomly post on it as if they're boomers on Facebook. And so they post like all these chain conspiracies, or they post like my husband has COVID, LOL, lots of love. Like, and just like, it's a bunch of people pretending to be boomers on Facebook, and all week I've been completely obsessed with it.
So it's basically people who don't understand technology.
No, it's people who completely understand technology pretending to be people that don't understand technology. So yeah, if you're looking for something to burn some time on, go to Facebook, go to A Group Where We All Pretend to Be Boomers. It's amazing. That's what I've been completely obsessed with. And that was obsessed. If you have something that you've been obsessed with, send the video to info@poplustexas.com. I don't know why I say this, because you never actually send them. So
yeah, we can send some of the time.
info@podblesstexas.com. Send it. We'll play it if you'd send it.
All right. And we thank you, Lulu, our next congresswoman from the 3rd District in beautiful Collin County, Frisco, Plano, McKinney, Lucas, Fairview area. Melissa.
What Plano.
Any more towns you want to rattle off?
I am.
Everywhere where the eye can see from Lillian, from behind Lillian. That is the Texas 3rd Congressional District. Kendall's left, not so much. Not to Kendall's left.
Not in the dark.
If anybody wants to give money, donate time, interns want to be part of electing the first congressional member from the 3rd District on the D side ever.
Nope, since the 70s.
But we
haven't. Since 1968.
Okay, that's the last time.
They
get in touch with Lulu's campaign.
At Lulu for Texas.
At Lulu for Texas. And we appreciate you being on. And Carol, Mr. Politico, where do people contact you?
You can follow me on Twitter at OGCarol. I want to say .com. It's just OGCarol on Twitter.
How do you spell Carol? Spell Carol.
It's KARROL.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And if people follow you, Lillian, where are they going to do that?
I'm on Twitter machine at Lillian_Salerno or through Pod Bless Texas. Or
Pod Bless Texas.
I might be getting back with you if you go to Pod Bless Texas. I get back with people on that.
Okay.
I don't answer anybody on my personal email.
She's too good for that. Yeah. And if folks want to follow me, they can go to Facebook, to Twitter, to Instagram, to Snapchat, to TikTok, to Newly Parlor, to LinkedIn, at Kendall Scudder on all the mediums.
And Newly Parlor.
Thank you for joining us on Pop West Texas, and have a blessed week.
See you soon.